fiddle around with the mic. Sorry, guys. Let's just get this right. So we're looking again at the church. For those of you that were with us last week, we looked at being a Christian is more than just a personal faith. It's more than just a personal thing, if you like. It is a personal thing, but it's more than that. When we become Christians, we are bought into a family. And we looked at that last week, and about being a Christian is about God's plan to create for himself a people for his own glory. That's what being a Christian and becoming a Christian is about. Being a follower of Jesus is, by definition, being brought into this family. So we looked at followers of Jesus and family on a mission last week. You can't be one without the other. You can't be a follower of Jesus without being part of this wonderful family that he's brought us into. And we talked a little bit last week about what that looks like practically, locally, to be part of that family. Today we're going to look, I suppose, at what we do. What does that family resemblance look like, if you like? What is that? What does that look like? For those of you that saw or heard Jude playing the drums there, that's a family resemblance of my drumming skills, I can tell you. Yeah, he's definitely got that from me. And I suppose the bottom line is today we're here to listen to Jesus. That's the bottom line. That is the bottom line. We're here to hear what Jesus has to say to us. There was a story of Jesus who went on a walk with some of his friends. And they were walking up a mountain, and it says it was a high mountain, so it took them some time. And there were some pretty high mountains where Jesus grew up, thousands of metres, some of them. So it would have taken some time. Jesus was leading the way. There were three people with him. There was Peter, James and John, and they were all walking up this mountain with Jesus, talking on the way. Don't know how long it took them, but when they got to the top, it says they were tired. The three disciples, the three followers of Jesus were tired. And they were sort of dozing and having a sleep. And as they came to, something strange was happening. Something weird that you don't expect on a walk. Jesus' face had started to shine and was shining brilliantly like the sun. Like the sun. And his clothes had gone blazingly white. It says whiter than anyone could have bleached them on earth. They were glowing white. Which is strange. And they were a stir of it scared about this. And there were two guys with him. There was Elijah and Moses that were talking to Jesus. And so Peter, who normally sort of starts talking when he gets nervous, doesn't he? Started saying some stuff. Oh, it's good that we're here. Maybe we can build you a tent to stay in. And he starts talking. And even as he's saying this, this cloud, this bright cloud comes in and envelops them. And they're terrified. And they fall face down on the floor. And then this voice comes out of the cloud. And the voice says, "This is my son, in whom I'm well pleased. Listen to him." And then Jesus comes and touches them on the shoulder, and they get up, and it's just Jesus, normal Jesus, if you like, not glowing Jesus, with none of these other people around him. And this, I guess, is the call that goes out throughout history. Listen to him. It's the call that went out to the disciples back then that they had to basically come to understand, and they were learning here to do. And it's the call that went out to the religious leaders and everyone at the time who never really understood. The large majority of them never really understood or came to see this. Listen to me. Jesus said some really outrageous, it seems, and offensive to some things in his life. So much so that, in fact, people would say that thought he was demon-possessed. You must be demon-possessed to say things like that. The Bible tells us people turned away from him because what he said. They stopped following him because what he said was too hard to hear. What you're saying is too hard to hear. And they turned away. And I suppose, as always, standing here in front of you guys, I'm always aware of my own inadequacies in communicating the Bible to people and shortfalls in my own life. But I would say, look past that and listen today to what Jesus is saying to you. We're going to just take a little bit of time to listen to Jesus. That looking at the light again, that's all we're doing today. It's just listening to Jesus and looking at that light. And I know whenever I'm listening to people, and I know from my own experience, and you will experience this, there may be just one thing today. There may be just something that really the Holy Spirit puts on your heart. That's it. That's Jesus speaking to you. And that may even not be something that I say. It may be your mind goes off on something else. Listen to what Jesus is saying. That's what the Heavenly Father says to us. Listen to him. John the Baptist, we've just heard about. John the Baptist was a cousin of Jesus, and John the Baptist was sat in a prison cell, probably awaiting his execution, or he was, but whether he knew it or not, he must have suspected, my time is short. And he was sat in this prison cell. He'd done everything God had asked him to do. So God said to him, and his call was to go and declare the arrival of the Messiah. That was John's job, to declare the coming of the Son of God, the one that was going to save Israel. John, go and tell the world that this he's arrived, he's coming, the one that's going to save Israel, the one that is going to free the world from their sin, the one that's going to take away the sin of the world. So John did that, and he'd done that, and he had announced the arrival of Jesus. And he knew that after that, that his job then would fade away, he would fade away, and Jesus would increase. He knew that, and that was fine. He accepted that, and he sat in this cell. And then seeds of doubt start coming into his mind. He starts hearing stories. He starts hearing reports of what Jesus is doing. And there's some doubt in it. And he says, is this the one? Is this the one? John's thinking, he's doing things very differently to how I was doing it or how God showed me to do it. I was in a desert for most of my life. I was camel skins and locusts. Didn't have any of the luxuries in life. I wasn't drinking wine. Yet Jesus here is spending his time at parties. Jesus is drinking wine. Is he the one? What's happening here? And even so, some of the reports coming to him would have been that this guy was a drunkard and a glutton, even some of the reports. And so John says, okay, I'm gonna send some of my disciples to this guy. I'm going to send them to Jesus and ask him, are you the one? So John does that. And if you've got a Bible, we're looking at this. Matthew 11. This is in Matthew 11, starting at verse 4. He sends some of his disciples to Jesus to ask him, John says, are you the one? Are you the one that we have been expecting, or should we carry on looking? And this is what Jesus said. Jesus answered them. He says, go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, and the dead are raised up, and the poor have good news preached to them. And blessed is the one who is not offended by me. These are what Jesus says are the defining things about him. These are the things that Jesus knew that John would associate with the promised Messiah. Because John knew his God. Jesus says, go and tell John these things and he'll be satisfied that I'm the Messiah. And today, if the challenge before us is to listen to Jesus, what do we do with this? I ask myself that same question. When I was preparing this, what do we do with these words? A little earlier on in this story, if you were to go back to Matthew 10, Jesus said almost the exact same words to his disciples when he sent the 12 disciples out. Matthew 10, verse 6 says this. It says, Jesus saying to his disciples, go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel and proclaim as you go, saying the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse lepers, cast out demons. You received without paying, give without paying. Give without pay. And John records Jesus saying this in his prayer to his Father. He says, as Jesus said to the Father, as you, Father, have sent me into the world, in the same way I send them into the world. Heal the sick, cleanse lepers, raise the dead, blind receiving sight, lame walking. This is a massive challenge to me. And I look at Therese. We had a good conversation a while ago when we were going on a journey somewhere about healing. It's a massive challenge to me. And I glance over these words and, you know, try and get to the bits that I feel I can do. And therein lies the problem. Because we can do none of it. Even the bits we think we can do, we can't do. And that is the issue, isn't it? I try and make what Jesus said fit with my experience. And the temptation is, I suppose, in this passage, is to make this about a spiritual opening of the eyes, what Jesus is doing behind the scenes. But I know I can't make that fit. You know, John says, Jesus said, go and tell John what you see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the dead are raised. What do we do with those words? I'm preaching to myself here. And it goes on, the poor have good news preached to them. And I suppose you get to this and you think, that sounds a bit out of place, doesn't it? That sounds a little pedestrian after the dead being raised. The poor have good news preached to them. It sounds a little bit out of place. And I suppose those other things are things you would expect the Messiah to do. The Son of God comes and he's healing and raising people from the dead. But good news preached to the poor, that sounds a little bit out of place. But of course, Jesus knew that this was something in his response to John. This is something that John would instantly associate with the Messiah. Instantly associate as central to God's kingdom coming to earth. Instantly associate with the heart of God. Again, because John knew his God. In the Old Testament, there's a king called Josiah. And he had a load of... He followed God. Josiah was a good king. He followed God. And he had sons that didn't. And in Jeremiah, who was a prophet in the Old Testament, he spoke to these sons. God spoke through Jeremiah to the sons. And he said to them, he said, does it make you a king to have more and more cedar? Did your father have food and drink? He did what was right and just, and so all went well with him. He defended the cause of the poor and needy, and so all went well. Is that not what it means to know me, declares the Lord? When we look at what we are to do and be as a people, and we say we are to do and be as Jesus was, as the Father has sent me, so I send you, then we have to look, I suppose, to see what Jesus said he came to do. And I know we've visited this a lot of times. When Jesus started his ministry, he stood up in the synagogue in his hometown, and his mandate, if you like, he set out the stamp of what he came to do, and he stood up and Isaiah, the scroll of Isaiah was handed to him, and he read from Isaiah 61 these words that we know very well. He said, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour. And then after reading it, he sat down and everyone was looking at him, and he said, today in your hearing these words are fulfilled. Good news to the poor. Some, I suppose, will say that this is the actual physical poor. Some will say, well, it's not really that, it's the spiritually poor. A number of years ago, I went to Uganda on a medical trip. There was a few of us, it was a whole family went and a whole team, and we held clinics in a little village outside Kampala for 2 weeks in a hot little hut. And one day this lad called Alan, 11 or 12 year old lad, came in, and he had an obvious infection in his upper arm here. He had a fracture that hadn't united right. He had sort of a sinus pus coming out of the top of his arm. He got an infection in the bone in the top here. Needed operation, probably multiple operations, antibiotics, and something the family could never have afforded to do. The long-term problems with that is ultimately probably losing the arm, if not his life, due to that. So I had the privilege of taking him to the local hospital in Kampala, which was not too far away. And we stood in this crammed orthopaedic waiting room, waiting for the doctor to come out and, and call us in. And the doctor came out and instantly picked me out of the room. The only white face in a sea of black faces in this room. Instantly picked me out and called me in. And we went in and had a conversation about, yeah, that's fine. We can sort it all out for you, sir. No problem. We can even do the operation today. And he sent us round for an x-ray of the lad's arm. And as we were sat, walking around and sat in the waiting room to have the x-ray, the guides that had come with us to take us just turned to me and says, he said, Dr. Jonathan, that's what they called me out there, Dr. Jonathan, you don't understand what it's like for us. And then he told me a story about, it happened a long time before that, when he and his wife were very young, and they had their first child, who wasn't even walking at the time. They had a moped for transport. Now, if anyone's ever been to Africa, you know that on a moped you can fit your whole family, no matter how big your family is, and some chicken and a goat and anything else basically that needs to be transported somewhere all goes on this moped. And they were travelling. It was the three of them. He was riding, the wife was on the back holding their child, and they were going through the hustle and bustle in Kampala. And a wing mirror on a car caught the clothing of the child and pulled the child out of her hands, and she was badly hurt, and they rushed her to the hospital. And in the hospital, they sat in a corridor unseen and watched as their daughter died, because basically they didn't have the money and they didn't have the status to tell anyone and to attract anyone to help. And he said to me, we have no rights, Dr. Jonathan, we have no voice. And it struck me, though, when I was there with him, as I looked around this waiting room and I saw all these people that were waiting, and I'd been pushed to the front with this chap. The thing with the poor, the thing with being poor, is that you are powerless. You are without a voice. You're powerless to be heard. You're powerless to change your situation. And that, to me, is a huge part of what being poor means. You can apply that to many situations and many people, not just the physically poor, not just those in poverty. Anyone who is oppressed, marginalised, anyone who's powerless to change the situation that they find themselves in, voiceless, unnoticed. But you can always apply it to those who are materially poor. It's sometimes said that God is biased towards the poor, but that's of course not true. God shows no partiality. But here's the thing, God is a God of justice. And in a world where everything is biased towards the rich, and the poor are oppressed, and the poor are marginalised, then God's actions in this world will always seem to be biased towards the poor. And as part of knowing our God and doing what he calls us to do, so should ours. And that's where our value of friends with the poor comes in. People should look at us and say they're friends with the poor. People should look at us and say we are biased towards the poor, in a world where the bias is the other way. And after all, this is the gospel, isn't it? The gospel of Jesus, at his centre, at the core, is a God who has done what we are powerless to do. We were powerless and God stepped in and did that. The gospel of grace to the undeserving and hope to the hopeless. And for people like Alan, this young lad, the gospel is good news, because it's news that God didn't leave them dying in a corridor. God didn't leave him, but God came down and God walked among those people. God walked among the voiceless and the hopeless in the world. The despised and the rejected is where Jesus spent all his time. The marginalised, and he preached good news to them. He says, you do have a voice. You are noticed. You are loved. You are made in my image. And I love you. And I've come to give you freedom. And of course, Jesus came, we go back to that, Jesus came to place people in families. He came to put people in families, to create a family for himself. A family where not only things like loneliness and unwantedness can be addressed and dealt with, but also poverty. And this is the family resemblance that we're called to. So as a church, I wanted to just touch on a few things of what that might look like and what that does look like for us as a church. And these are just illustrations. I think there are some obvious things we do as a church that stands out. So we have Kath, Phil and Theo and Sammy that we support in what they're doing, which is reaching some of the poorest communities and giving them life skills, but also reaching them with the good news of Jesus. This is family on a mission and friends with the poor, isn't it? Embodied in them. We have Emmanuel in Uganda, and we support him to train and support pastors in local churches, amongst other things, and not even local churches, but actually churches across the whole of East Africa, in supporting them to support their communities. Again, some of the poorest communities in the world. And at Catalyst, for those of you that are coming, we've got a chance there for Emmanuel to come and be with us for a while, to tell us what he's doing and to pray with him. So I'd encourage you actually when you get there to spend some time with him, to encourage him. Closer to home, I wanted to say something about Recovery House that many of you will have heard about and be up to date with. We know that God has spoken to us about our involvement as a church with people that have problems with drug and alcohol addiction. And for a long time, quite a few folks have been praying into this, that God would open up a house in Bromsgrove where we could do that, where people could come and be supported in their addiction and could be introduced back into a community and given hope in hopeless situations. And many of you will have heard a charity called Carpenter's Arms up in Loughborough, which is where Scott works at the moment. And earlier this year, they announced their two goals for this year. One was to open up a female rehab house, and the second was to open up a recovery house here in Bromsgrove, which was an amazing answer to prayer. We were at the stage where we were just saying, God, I don't know how this is going to happen. How can this happen? We are stretched and we don't know how to do. We don't know the next steps. And God just steps in and says, here you are. Here you are. I'm going to do that bit. And so that's moved on a bit, in fact, in the last few weeks. And they've had an offer accepted on a house that's going ahead. They're just working out the details of that house. But hopefully, within the next, they want the next 6 months, that house will be up and running. Staffed from in the same model as their houses up in Loughborough. They run these houses up in Loughborough. But a fantastic answer to prayer, and something that we feel God has called us to be involved in as a church. And it isn't so much, I suppose, just to say this, that there's something special about this group of people with drug and alcohol problems any more than there is about a whole lot of other people groups. It's just that there's a need that's not being met, and there is hopelessness, and there is marginalisation, and there's poverty in a lot of senses. But it's a group of people that we can step in and that we can take the good news of Jesus to these people. The gospel, the good news. So there are many ways of being involved in that. There will be loads of ways. And I think probably the best thing is if you want to know more, speak to Steve, myself or Ben, and to give you some idea, there'll be ways of being very practically involved in collecting food for the place, in taking guys to different appointments, in inviting them to home groups, in having them around for meals, teaching them how to cook. There's a whole long, long list of ways everyone can be involved. And actually, even when they come here, making guys and people, new people, feel really welcome and real part of us. We all have a part to play in that. And I guess, like with all of this, it can't never just be one or two people's jobs. This is who we are. This is us as a family. Another thing I wanted to mention today as well was something that we're going to be doing in freeing Steve up some of his time one day a week to be working in the community around here, around the Recovery House, I suppose, in the community side of supporting Recovery House. So he'll be, I suppose, to give it a title, will be a recovery community worker, I think, something like that. There is no official, is that the official title, Steve? Something like that, yeah. But basically what that is there's a massive gap in support for people with substance misuse problems. And so that'll be making connections between different networks. It will be trying to start and initiate support for them in the community. It will be raising awareness and educating churches and bringing churches together in this, organising the prayer around that, equipping people. And it's that sort of stuff. Obviously, it's one day a week. And obviously, that's not just the only time Steve puts into things like this, but it's freeing up some of his time to push into what we think God is calling us as a church and as a people to do. And we've been blessed financially. We have the money to be able to do that. So that's what we're pushing into. And I realise that, so I suppose some of what I've said since seem like projects and they're not to be viewed like that. I suppose they're more expressions of who we are and ways of just doing what we feel God's calling us to do. And as I say, none of this can ever be one or two of us. It's about us being a family. It's about our family resemblance to our Father. It's about us doing what Jesus did and what he calls us to do. There's a lovely story of Jesus meeting a man born blind. And there were religious leaders there and they were all arguing and chatting about whether or not it was this bloke or his parents that had sinned to make him the way he was. And Jesus steps up and he just spits on the ground, rubs the mud and the clay, just picks it up and puts it in the guy's eyes and then says, go off to Siloam, which means sent. Go off to Siloam and wash the water off your eyes. So the guy does that and then he gets his sight back and he returns and everyone can't believe it's the same guy. And he says, no, it's me, it is me. And are you sure? Yeah, it's me. He says, well, how did you get your sight back? And he basically says, this guy called Jesus came up to me. He rubbed mud in my eyes and then he told me to go to Siloam and wash it off. And I did what he said and now I can see. I suppose that's just where I wanted to finish today, is listening to Jesus and doing what he says. That's it. So the two things that I wanted to finish on was, what is Jesus saying to you? What's Jesus saying to you today? Or what's he speaking to you at the moment? And then how is that thinking about that family resemblance? If someone was looking at me, how would they see in my life that family resemblance of my Father?